The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
The DUP has said this morning it could not support Boris Johnson's Brexit plan as what could be the UK's final summit starts today. This is Shane Coleman speaking to Deputy Editor of the Belfast Newsletter, Ben Lowry, on News Talk Breakfast this morning about the DUP's decision.
Every possibility that they've been crushed, and some of us within unionists thought all along that there was a possibility that unionists would be crushed in this. We're a very small percentage of the population in the UK. I think that's one of the reasons why the DUP is very keen to get a deal. And I think that it has been nothing less than disastrous from a unionist point of view, that something that wasn't on the cards 5 years ago, that Middle England, a very large chunk of Middle England, thinks, well, we don't care about Northern Ireland, we'd prefer Brexit. Of course that's a disaster and a trauma for unionists, and of course that is one of the reasons that unionists have moved so far. But it's so important that people realise that whatever criticisms one makes of the DUP, the movement they have made is vast,
okay.
Simply vast, and they are at breaking point. Okay. And there are some things that they just can't agree.
So the DUP have moved significantly, but they can't move any further. Talks between the UK and EU negotiators look to go down to the wire as the leaders of the 28 member states gather in Brussels. Europe correspondent for Euronews, Shona Murray, is on the line and also will be joined by political columnist with The Guardian newspaper, Raphael Baer. But first of all, Shona, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we heard from Angela Merkel briefly, and certainly the Irish border and the continuing lack of a physical border, an evident border, is something high on her agenda. So she's going to stick with the line that the Taoiseach and indeed Michel Barnier have adhered to all this time.
Yes, yeah, she's saying that she will never allow hate and violence to flare up on the island of Ireland again. I think, you know, that's been the sentiment expressed by her the most alongside the European Commission and as well as the French government. I think that means, I suppose it proves the impetus and desire to get a deal over the line. But, you know, that statement this morning from the DUP essentially possibly torpedoing the deal has really brought a huge setback to the mood here in Brussels. So, you know, everybody thought that finally we get to a point where there was this almost impossible deal over the line between the EU and the UK. And you have to remark, when you look at the deal, both sides have moved. Yes, the UK moved significantly in that, you know, you'll have the Northern Ireland in the single market. And the customs union application will be mainly de facto EU rules. But the EU is allowing this customs partnership to apply to Northern Ireland because it's such a small territory, even though it's extremely cumbersome. And it does put the single market into a vulnerable position. But it has moved for the sake of getting something passed. And again, as I said to you during the week, you know, speaking to sources, really at the forefront of their minds was, look, can this get over the line from the DUP? Because no matter what way you look at it, I mean, it absolutely sets Northern Ireland apart from the rest of the UK. And that's something that they said they couldn't countenance. If you look at their statement today, now it's not as emphatic, no, as we would normally hear from them. They
The three areas of contention. I mean, we thought progress was being made yesterday, and we were getting tweets from here, there, and yon indicating that the DUP had agreed to this. They don't agree on consent. They don't agree on the proposals on customs and the new area that emerged of VAT. They have a problem with that too. So it's, to borrow from Margaret Thatcher, it's no, no, no.
Yeah, that is very true. And like from the consent issue, I suppose what they wanted was the essential veto. But actually, I was speaking to someone this morning about this who made the point, you know, because they're looking for, they want it to be not a simple majority, but cross community support. But they had made to the point that in the Good Friday Agreement, there's only devolved issues applied to cross community support. And of course, Brexit, as we know, is not a devolved issue because it's a UK wide issue. So therefore, the cross community support doesn't apply To this scenario, it has to be majority, and they're looking for it to be cross-community because that would give them much more power than a simple majority. So there's not going to be any movement on that, and I think that will hold things up. Similarly with the customs issue, I mean, I think that I was surprised even to see that the EU was going ahead with this customs partnership. The other thing about it is that there is a hope that in the future trade agreement, which is down the line, alongside the level playing field stuff, there will be no tariffs between Great Britain and Northern Ireland and Northern Ireland and the Irish state. That's, you know, that's what they hope for in the future, but we just don't know that what that's going to look like. But that's kind of the hope. So anyway, what I've heard this morning is they're really at the limit of what can be moved, and it's down to Boris Johnson.
Okay,
that's what
everybody's saying. We've just heard that Boris Johnson has spoken in the last few minutes to Jean-Claude Juncker, but we don't know what he said, but they've been in touch with each other. How thin is patience wearing in Brussels?
Oh, as you can imagine. I mean, again, we're still in the realm of what was sort of discussed with Theresa May last year. You know, it's evolved somewhat, and certainly the consent issue does help. And it's not the Northern Ireland backstop, because that was sort of a permanent solution which didn't grant Northern Ireland any authority over. So you've got the consent issue there. And of course, he's got the customs partnership. But generally speaking, in order to avoid a customs infrastructure on the island of Ireland, you need a border down the Irish Sea. And that's what they've done. They've minimised the border in the Irish Sea because there are some exemptions for certain products going across. And they've talked about a free trade agreement. But things can't move much more. And Pat, look at what's happening, you know, globally, geopolitically. Particularly in Turkey. You know, you've got discussions today, very confrontational discussions about Albania and North Macedonia. The future of Europe has been put on hold because of Brexit for the past 3 years for an exiting member state when other things really need to evolve. And so the patience is, I mean, we keep saying this, patience. How many times can you describe patience?
Here's a question for you, Sean. You probably don't know the answer. It's only speculative. But I'm wondering, if you look at the extension that Boris Johnson is obliged to ask for if this all goes pear-shaped, which is until January 31st, and in the interim, you may have a general election in Britain, you may have other political happenings around the place, including possibly in our own country. You've got Christmas intervening, the Christmas holiday, when many of the Europeans take off to the skiing slopes. So there isn't a huge amount of time if they give them that extension. Is there a possibility they say, hang on a second, guys, this is all crazy stuff. We're going to be in the pressure cooker again in a matter of a couple of weeks. So why not take a year? Why not take 2 years? In other words, why not take as long as it takes?
Yeah, that would be the optimum solution, I think, particularly for some member states. Ireland would definitely jump at the chance of something like that to allow things settle a little bit for a general election to take place for possibly a second referendum. But I don't think that's on the cards. I don't see the EU's not really in the business. I mean, it may try, but I don't think it's going to be in the business of just demanding what type of extension, although the last time it did happen like that. But I just you know, you're right. I don't know the answer to, because you just don't know how these things are going to evolve. I mean, if you were to say that we were going to give you a year long extension, then that's seems like Europe trying to meddle in the democratic process of the UK. And it also will fuel even more anti-EU sentiment, because it will be saying you're actually not allowing us to leave the EU, and it's going to be 4 years since the referendum result. So there has to be a decision taken from the House of Commons as to whether, you know, this is going to get over the line or there will be a second referendum. There's some hope, you know, with Jeremy Corbyn saying during the week that they would vote for a deal if there was a second referendum attached. So that could be, you know, something that that brings some sort of hope on the horizon that there could be some sort of end to it, a democratic end to it. But as it stands, it's not clear that this can get across the House of Commons. Even if you do have a few, like Nigel Evans, I heard him on BBC Radio 4 today. He's a member of the ERG. He said he's going to vote for the deal. And you heard the Steve Bakers and people like that. But still, there's not enough probably from Labour to pass it. Anyway, you do need the DUP. From a democratic point of view, there's no way he could just override them, I don't think.
Okay, Seana, thank you very much for joining us. A Europe correspondent for Euronews, Seana Murray. Raphael Baer, political columnist with The Guardian, has been listening to all of that. Raphael, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, it's a fascinating situation that's unfolding. Boris Johnson indicated that he was going to head to the summit today in the expectation, perhaps, that there might be a text that everyone could discuss. He's spoken in the last few minutes to Jean-Claude Juncker. We don't know what has been said. How do you see the political land lying?
Well, in a sense, I mean, it's sort of a grimly familiar situation because, well, first of all, you know, this is actually the third apparently hard Brexit deadline we've had, October the 31st. But before October the 31st, there was April the 12th, and then there was before that March the 29th. And it's a lot of the politics of this is just sort of replicating stuff we've seen before. So Boris Johnson's sort of character and personality are very different from Theresa May's, but the sort of structural obstacles he's run up against, one of which is the fact that he doesn't have a majority in Parliament, and the other one that being that Brexit is ferociously difficult to do, and there probably isn't a way of doing it that can satisfy all the people who said they wanted to leave the European Union while also being acceptable to the EU. And so we're sort of back there. And what you tends to happen in these situations, in my experience, is Westminster gets obsessed with this kind of parlour game of, you know, can we count up to 320, 320 being the number of MPs you'd need to get a deal over the line. And everyone sort of focuses on that intensely for a few days without really stopping to think about whether the arrangement that is being struck is a good one for the UK or could be made to work at all. And then suddenly then the DUP turn around and say, well, we're not having any of that anyway. And we're kind of slightly back to square one. So the focus will now shift very quickly to what kind of extension is going to be required? How can Boris Johnson sort of do the choreography of asking for or getting an extension without that looking like a completely humiliating climb down, given that he made that very ambitious do or die, will definitely be out by the 31st. Commitment when he was seeking the Tory leadership.
Now, when you listen to what Ben Lowry, the deputy editor of the Belfast Newsletter, said to our breakfast programme this morning about how dismayed the unionists are about how Middle England has kind of abandoned them, the arch Brexiteer voting element of the population don't give a fig for Northern Ireland, although the ERG and people like that in politics claim that they do give a fig. But it must be very dispiriting for people. And Europe will look at the great empire that Britain had, embracing Canada and Australia, New Zealand, Kenya, Egypt, many, many more countries, 22 in all. And we're reduced now to Northern Ireland, where a majority wanted to remain and a minority, as represented by the DUP, want a Brexit. And they are, you know, a very small tail wagging a much diminished dog.
Yeah, I was very interested by that observation about the relationship between Middle England and Northern Ireland. And it resonated. It sounded fairly true to me, actually. I think there's always been a tension within the sort of the hard Brexit political movement between what is essentially a new kind of English nationalism, really that's where its sort of intellectual or cultural roots are, and then that sort of attached itself to the unionist issue largely after the joint report, actually, in December 2017. Using the sort of the indivisibility, the sort of sacred argument about the union as a stick to beat Theresa May at that particular moment. Now, they wouldn't want to denigrate the unionist credentials of high Tory MPs and people like Jacob Rees-Mogg and others who it's the Conservative and Unionist Party. I mean, they do believe that and they feel it very strongly. But ultimately, when it really comes down to the question if they're afraid they might lose Brexit altogether or they might end up in a much softer Brexit, and they are forced to choose between that sort of English nationalist side and the what for them is a slightly more abstract idea of sort of a kinship bond or with all the other parts of the union. They choose the English nationalism. That's the side they come down on when they have to.
There's a huge irony in that Jacob Rees-Mogg is a Catholic. And, you know, he's supporting a party which is largely Presbyterian and Protestant. And if he lived in Northern Ireland, I suspect that this would create more tensions than he can imagine living in the Shires.
There's a more exquisite irony than that, is that when Jacob Rees-Mogg was in the business of really trying to sabotage Theresa May's Brexit process, and he thought that she was about to do some sort of compromise that would have softened Brexit too much for his taste, and the sort of the backstop was starting to emerge. He forced an amendment onto a trade bill in the House of Commons that makes it illegal, essentially, to have Northern Ireland in a different customs area to mainland Great Britain. That is now the law. So it's quite possible that technically the deal that Boris Johnson is trying to do isn't even legal, according, and you have to repeal that bit of law that Jacob Rees-Mogg did, essentially just to spite Theresa May and to say, no, there's no way you can do a deal like this. And now this is a deal that Jacob Rees-Mogg could probably get on board with, not least because he's in the cabinet and he's sort of bound to. So that's these are the sort of knots they've tied themselves into, essentially because the driving force of this was, what's the hardest possible Brexit we can get? That interest aligned with the DUP for a while when it was putting pressure on Theresa May. But actually, was there a long-term sort of ideological alignment? Not so much, not for all of them.
We're getting reports from Reuters that no Brexit negotiations will be undertaken with Boris Johnson at the EU summit.
Yeah, that's not surprising, though, is it? Because you negotiate through Michel Barnier, through the Commission. That's always been the position. And once what the EU will definitely not want is a situation where Boris Johnson is in the council with the 27 other leaders or trying to sort of carve out little bilaterals and sort of taking, you know, Macron or Merkel by the arm and saying, come on, you know, well, we can do this deal, we can do that sort of deal. That is definitely not the way it works. So, you know, if Barnier and the Commission have said this is as far as we've got and we can't do anything more on VAT and we can't give the DUP anything more, that's your problem, Boris Johnson, not ours. Then once the summit doors are open and, as it were, the green light is on, you're not going to be negotiating the detail in that room, no.
Now, here's the other possibility, that although the pound is down with news of the DUP's rejection of what was negotiated in a tortuous fashion yesterday, the likelihood, therefore, of the letter going off under the Benn Act and an extension being given, and perhaps the notion of a second referendum looming, that Remainers may be, in spite of the pound being down, they may be up.
Well, yes, one of the interesting things that's happened, and I think has been less commented on over the last sort of 72 hours, is that with Boris Johnson going sort of into the negotiating tunnel, although it was quite a leaky tunnel, but going into that very intense period of negotiation, by definition, the whole shape and the frame of the Brexit discussion went back to being about a deal and we need a deal. And suddenly that the sort of rhetorical device of saying, well, we don't care about a deal, we'd be perfectly good with no deal. I mean, setting aside the fact that legally he is obliged to send this letter and seek an extension. But I think more generally, suddenly even the quite hard Brexit component of the Conservative Party has got into the sort of deal-making space. And no deal just seems to have been sort of slightly devalued now on that side. I think there was just every time you get really right up close to the no deal proposition, more and more people who look at it really hard think, no, that's a properly terrible idea. Let's not do that. And it doesn't seem to be, I don't get a strong feeling that anyone now really thinks that on the 31st of October, if this deal they're talking about now isn't done, somehow we're going to crash out of the EU. I think that is now
so,
no longer really.
So the choice actually is now a binary one. It's either exit with a deal or remain.
As of the sort of 1st of November, I think even exit with a deal is going to be tricky, because the thing to always remember in this is that even if you can somehow find the 320 MPs who will vote in a one-off, sort of what we call the meaningful vote to get the deal over the line, you've still got to legislate, you know, and that's primary legislation, both houses of parliament, you know, committee stages, all that. You can't sustain a 320 coalition that includes 20 Tory MPs who got expelled from the party, who hate Boris Johnson and his advisers, still the DUP, maybe a couple of Labour MPs who are going to be getting a lot of heat from their side. If you think about the coalition in this parliament that you would have to assemble to try and actually really sort of, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's on getting this deal done. Definitely can't happen by the 31st of October. Can it happen actually without having a general election? I'm kind of thinking less and less that that's possible.
So finally, Raphael, we had a situation where Dominic Cummings was helping Boris Johnson to construct a situation where you can blame Parliament. Then you can blame the courts. you can blame Europe. You can blame the Irish and Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. And each one in turn, you know, Parliament and courts become less relevant as time has moved on. Europe has bent over backwards, gone into the tunnel, you know, teased everything out, given as much time as they possibly could, worked through the night. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar is seen as helping to break the logjam with his meeting a week ago with Boris Johnson. And you're left with the blame game falling on the shoulders of Arlene Foster and the DUP. That's all Boris can do.
Yes, although, I mean, ultimately, I think he will still, if it goes to a vote in Parliament, as long as the sort of all the opposition vote against it, he can still pretty much say this Parliament's packed with Remainers and that's why it hasn't happened. I mean, technically, you know, the numbers, what's really hurt him on the numbers is the DUP. But does that stop him from the sort of adopting the broader frame, which is, look, I did absolutely everything. No one can doubt my Brexit credentials. I delivered a brilliant deal, as he would frame it. We're just going to need a new parliament to make this happen. I don't think that he's politically, if he can get to that general election, and particularly if he's fighting that general election against the Labour Party led by Jeremy Corbyn, I don't think politically he's actually in that bad a situation. I think he's got a bit of a Teflon coating in that respect. But eventually, what damages him more, I think, is the competence question, the sense that actually since getting in, he seems to have been bouncing a bit all over the place. And there was one minute it was, we'll do no deal and we'll prorogue Parliament. Oh, hang on, no, that was illegal. But it's OK because we've got a brilliant plan. Oh, no, hang on, I've scrapped most of that plan. We've got a different plan. Oh, no, that hasn't worked. And the feeling that he actually doesn't really know what he's doing and possibly doesn't really believe in anything. That will cut through a little bit. And crucially, I mean, one of the reasons I think the last 24 hours have been difficult for him is because, you know, although the EU has been determined, obviously, to get a sort of legal, technical guarantees on some of these difficult questions, ultimately a political deal requires trust. And the simple fact is with this prime minister is that the more people get to know Boris Johnson, the less they trust him. And that just does him damage in politics over time.
Political columnist with The Guardian newspaper, Raphael Baer, thank you very much for joining us. We've also been told that no text of the Brexit agreement as negotiated by the parties up to the early hours of this morning, no text of that has actually been given to the EU. So there's no document even to discuss at this stage.